Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about, spinning out of the conversation we're about to have a little bit later on after the 3. We are going to open up the phone lines and talk about what you think is funny. What's funny to you? We'll talk about every sort of kind of entertainment that makes you laugh, whether it be, you know, books or movies or TV shows or comedians, that kind of stuff. And we're just going to talk about comedy and what makes you laugh. And the reason why we're going to do that is because my guest right now is the author of a book called What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplays, Stories, and More. It is a terrific book. It's like a how-to book on how to get started in writing comedy and in different forms and in different styles. And there's great advice in it. It's really funny, and it's also got a bunch of really interesting and fun and helpful exercises that can get your brain muscles going and to get your writing going. And it is written by Brad Schreiber, who is a great writer, also co-wrote Phil Proctor's book. We talked with Phil Proctor from Firesign Theater a few weeks ago. He co-wrote the book Where's My Fortune Cookie with him, and we thought we'd have Brad on to talk about his book, What Are You Laughing At? So let's welcome Brad to the show. Brad, welcome to the show, sir.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Good, man. I really enjoyed your book. I really did very much.
Oh, thank you very much. This is a revised edition of the book I wrote out of my UCLA Extension comedy class from years ago. And really, the greatest joy is creating bizarre exercises and seeing people do well with it.
Yeah, no, it's really, it's a fun part of the book. I've written comedy a bunch. I wrote a bunch of comedic plays here in Chicago that have been produced and stuff. And so a lot of the stuff that I read in the book was really insightful and exercises that I'd never tried before, but certainly if I'm going to continue to write, would do again.
Well, you know, I got it in my blood in a way, Nick. My mother, Mona Schreiber, was a writer and an actress. And she had her own column in the town I lived in Northern California, Foster City. And I was about 15 years old when she wrote a column about me and how my personal hygiene suffered called Scrape Him Off, He's Mine. And when I got to the bus stop that day, everybody was reading the Foster City Progress and pointing at me and going, oh, scrape him off. And despite that, I'm done with therapy. I worked through it. But she was a phenomenal, phenomenal writer herself in the school of Irma Bombeck.
Mm.
And I've started an international humor writing contest since the year 2000. The Mona Schreiber Prize for Humorous Fiction, Nonfiction. Every year I give away $500 to the funniest pieces, and people submit from all over the world. So you could say I've got it genetically.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, let's go back to the beginnings, too. Now, you were just talking about the influence that your mother had on you. Is that what brought you down the avenue to be a comedy writer?
Well, you know, this connects to Phil Proctor. When I went to San Francisco State University, Nick, they said, hey, you can take anybody's material you want and create a half-hour performance piece. So my best friends, Brian and Nick, and I did Nick Danger, Third Eye.
Sure, there you go. There you go.
There I was. So there I was. This is like the mid-70s, Nick. There I was doing Rocky Rococo, you know, saying, you stupid toad, I ought to beat your brain out. And, you know, decades later, I wind up co-writing his memoirs.
Yeah, we had him on a few weeks ago. He was such a great interview, and the book is great and full of so many crazy stories. I mean, the Chinese restaurant story alone is
yeah, living through a gangland slaying and having been told about it by a psychic.
Right.
But even the small stories, Nick, I listened to the interview. It was wonderful, and thank you for doing it.
Oh, yeah.
But some of the side stories, like once he and Peter Bergman were opening for Bob Marley. Did he talk to you about that?
No, he did. It's in the book, obviously, but no, he didn't. We didn't talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Peter Bergman, who was a very outrageous and upfront guy, goes up to Bob Marley and the Wailers, and he goes, hey, man, can we have some of your marijuana? So they put it in a Boston Bank bag that they carry their marijuana around in, and Proctor and Bergman smoke it before they go on stage, and they're so high they don't even know what gender they are. And they're doing this comedy, and everybody in the audience is a Rastafari.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost, they're no white college kids. They're all Bob Marley and the Wailers fans. And they have no idea whatsoever what Procter and Bergman are talking about.
Yeah.
And at one point, there's a dead spot, and from the back of the house, you hear one person in a Jamaican accent say, "What did that man just say?"
Great
so,
stuff.
You know,
yeah.
Who else but Phil Proctor would, you know, have the temerity
yeah.
to talk about his failures as well as their great successes?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what led you to? So you start. You know, you're doing Nick Nanger at that time, and then was that the route that you took right there? Was Firesign Theater a big influence on you? I would imagine.
They were, but I loved everything. I loved the music comedy of Stan Freberg.
Yeah.
There were certain stand-ups that I really admired. I'm into people who break new boundaries. Like, I wrote a book called Becoming Jimi Hendrix because I always thought that Jimi was one of the most amazing and influential electric guitarists of all time.
Yeah.
Firesign Theater, to me, one of the most unusual and literary and creative audio concept comedians of all time.
Yeah.
So in that vein, I started a comedy group which was too strange to succeed, called the Burlingame Philharmonic Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Our best gig was opening for Santana at Winterland. And unfortunately, people were too drunk and high to understand what we were talking about.
Yeah, I was gonna ask what, you know, because I know that a lot of comedians and groups, you know, comedy groups in the 70s opened up for musical acts, and I always thought that just must be the most difficult thing in the world.
It's difficult, Nick, but it's also wonderful, and it's from a bygone era. For example, I write for Huffington Post, and I recently interviewed John McLaughlin, the amazing guitarist from the Mahavishnu Orchestra in the 70s. And he said that what he misses from that era is how comedians would open up for any kind of music. McLaughlin said that he opened for bluegrass, for acid rock, for jazz groups. And, you know, there were no rules, and people could go to a show and learn about different types of music. So now if you go to see country music, all the acts are country,
right,
and rock and so forth and so on. I'd like to see us get back to this cross-pollinization where people learn about other types of music and comedy.
Yeah, no, I think that's it was an interesting time. I'm, you know, I started going to concerts in the mid 70s, so I had a little piece mm-hmm. of that when I was a kid, but that faded out very quickly.
Yeah, you know, Firesign Theater, they played with so many different kinds of groups. Once they were teamed up with Andy Kaufman very early in his career, that was another example of somebody who was a little ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And they were at a Playboy Club, and Proctor told me that no one understood what Andy Kaufman was doing.
Yeah.
And when you think about his effect later on in the field of comedy, you realize, well, the times had to catch up to him.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So performing on stage and then writing, was it something that you always wanted to do?
Yeah. And it was theater in the Bay Area. I helped co-found the Bay Area Playwrights Center, which is still in existence since 1980. And I did radio. I worked with Sam Shepard. And I've had a very psychotically eclectic career, you might say.
Uh-huh.
So after theater and radio, I moved to the L.A. area where I am now and got into books. And my first book was a parody of the Guinness Book of World Records called Weird Wonders and Bizarre Blunders. And the publisher told me to create phony world records to make them sound plausible. So I'd say the most dangerous boulevard in the world is in Milan, where there's a fatal car accident every 90 seconds. It's called Blood Boulevard. And so, you know, that did very well for Simon & Schuster. I got away from writing strictly comedy, but that was then. And then inevitably I switch off. I'll write something funny. I'll write something serious.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about the current edition of your book, What Are You Laughing At? You did talk about its origin.
Yeah.
Talk about the origin and then how it became this book.
So I had this class at UCLA Extension on humor writing, and I met a lot of really wonderful people who were not professional writers but were really smart. And I was really inspired because I always said that embarrassment is one of the building blocks of comedy. And so I'd start every class, you know, it was like an 8-week class, asking students to tell me their most embarrassing moments. And, you know, I had a British woman who said she was once dancing with Prince Charles and one of her breasts came out of her brassiere, that sort of stuff. And then I had this guy who was a fireman. And he said, my most embarrassing moment is when there was a fire in Malibu and a bunch of us firemen had to take these bodies out. And they were all burnt and they started breaking into pieces. And I thought, oh, my God. I was looking at the students in the class. I was sure that they were going to fire me from UCLA because of this. And I said to them, listen, is it possible that maybe your perspective is a little different from everybody else? And he admitted, yes, because we have to get through the day. We have an extremely dark sensibility. But this guy, by the end of the class, Nick, had the funniest piece. It was about a fat, disgusting supervillain who was greasy and had an eye patch and stroked an Angora cat, and his name was Brad Schreiber. So,
well, that's all. That's all in the book too. That's in like in the first part of the book. And I also love that after each chapter. But I want to talk about this because we have to take a break. But tell the embarrassing story exercise is right after the first chapter of the book. It suggested you do that, and I want to talk about this. We got to take a break, but when we come back, Brad, I want to talk about why embarrassment is so key to comedy. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Hang on a second, Brad. Brad Schreiber is with us, and he is the author of What Are You Looking At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. It's a terrific book. It really is. And you can actually check out his website at brashcyber.com, which is a takeoff on his name, but we have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay. More coming up right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. You can check us out. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. If you check out our Facebook page, you will find the information for my current guest, Brad Schreiber. And he has written a book called What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. And this is, in fact, the second edition. And we're talking about the book and more. Brad, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Nick, and hello to all you night owls.
Yes, those are my listeners. They are the weird night owls of the world.
They are my people too, Nick.
Very good. Well, let's talk about that. You know, we just talked before the break. We were talking about how during the UCLA times, you would tell people to tell their most embarrassing stories, and a lot of weird things would be said. And you also suggest that you do that as an exercise in the book. What is it about embarrassment that you think that opens you up for comedy?
Well, I refer in What Are You Laughing At? To the things that hurt you in comedy writing. I refer to as humors, tumors. And they're basically cliche and meekness. It's not being daring enough. So embarrassment, I have an exercise about embarrassment. It breaks the ice among students. It's something they can specifically remember. And the more distance you have from it, the more comedic possibilities you see. One of the things I like to do with the embarrassment exercise with students is I tell them, recall what happened in the embarrassing moment. Now add something that didn't happen to it. Build on it. Mm-hmm. So that they get a sense of, especially with stand-ups and people who write comedic memoirs, it's often a device where they exaggerate, but it's based on their real lives. So the embarrassment exercise is great if you add to it, and then you dare somebody to figure out what you're lying about.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's a perfect exercise for, you know, alternative news and alternative facts, which is where we live today, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You address a lot of the challenges that are specific to each kind of writing that you talk about in the book. Like, there are different challenges to write screenplays. There are different challenges to write nonfiction humor, and short stories and things like that.
It's got every possible kind of writing, you know, laundry lists, letters, and the contest I referred to, the Mona Schreiber Prize, you know, it's at my website, you know, and I encourage people to write in any form they like, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. I don't want just people telling me funny stories about their families. I want them to grow, and I want them to try and write in areas that they haven't written before. And by the way, as I say, it's international. The first woman who won the contest lived in Paraparaumu, New Zealand. I rest my case.
Humor is everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it's
really great. Now, talk about the actual, you know, how this book evolved and how you wrote it. When did you start adding things to it and deciding that you wanted to open it up to all types of writing?
Well, that's what I wanted to do right from the start. I wanted to cover everything, and I've got about 70 really great writer examples. You know, Larry Gelbart, who created MASH, who was just this wonderful man. He wrote in every form. I'm so honored. He said, "At last, a how-to book by somebody who actually knows how to."
Yeah. You got a lot of amazing, by the way, Brad, you got a lot of amazing poll quotes here from really, really good people, really talented people.
Yeah, I know. I'm relentless. But the fact of the matter is, I appreciate that, Nick. The fact of the matter is, I wanted to take from all the great writers. So there's like 70 or 80 different writers in all forms. And then, as I say, creating the exercises was the most fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I hope that some writers who only work in one form will pick up the book and go, "Oh, this is great. I've never written a radio play before." Or, you know, "I've never written a comedic stage play. I've always written stand-up material, and there's a real joy to exploring this new area."
Yeah. No, well, you know, as a person who has written, it's a book that I marveled at while I was reading. And I mean that. It's just, there's great stuff in it. I want to mention very quickly that you pull, as you mentioned, examples, throughout the book. Examples of writing from, you know, screenplays and situation comedies and things like that, however it applies to the chapter. But the chapter on screenplay writing, you actually give an example from one of my favorite movies of all time.
Really?
And it's
what is that?
It's The Ref.
Oh, I'm so glad. I know Richard LaGravenaise.
Oh.
And he is, you know, he started as a playwright, Nick,
yeah,
in New York.
Yeah.
And The Ref, oh, my God.
It's my favorite Christmas movie. It's my favorite Christmas movie of all time.
Who can forget when Kevin Spacey says to Judy Davis, "Darling, why don't you eat something?" And with this acidic look on her face, she goes, "Darling, why don't you eat me?"
It's my favorite line in the movie, Brad. That's my favorite. Man. And Judy Davis' delivery of that line is so great.
Oh.
Now, when I saw that you were pulling quotes from The Ref, I'm like, this guy knows what he's doing. And and LaGravenaise is such a great writer and a varied writer. I mean, he wrote and directed a movie called Living Out Loud with Holly Hunter, which is one of my favorites. And I just think he's an extraordinary writer.
Well, I'm prejudiced because I started off in writing plays, Nick. But I tend to think, and we see this a lot in television today, whether it's comedy or drama, that a lot of the staff writers started out as playwrights.
Right.
They have a real command of the richness of language, and they know how to build character. They're not about necessarily plot as much as they are strong character. And that's where LaGravenaise came from.
Yeah, he's just one of my favorite writers. And so talking about the exercise, can you give us a couple examples of your favorite exercises that are in the book?
Well, I actually like the fact, you know, Chicago, you know, is a town, I think it's fair to say, that really loves hockey, right?
Yes. So, yes, sir.
So here's the thing. I love hockey, too, even though I live in L.A., and I started thinking about coming up with comedic character names. And one day I was watching an NHL game, and this was some years ago during the first edition of What Are You Laughing At? And I was hearing, you know, the announcer go, "And Adam Deadmarsh has got the puck. And Ziggy Palfy's been smashed into the boards. And Jonathan Chichu scores." And I went, these names are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go A through Z through the NHL and list all the most bizarre names so that if somebody is creating a character name, They should never come up with Jim Smith or Joan Johnson. All you have to do is look at the rosters of NHL teams and all these guys, you know, Nikolai Khabibulin. Once wrote a radio play with a character named Khabibulin, who was the most. He was like a Chechen landlord, and he was the best character in it. And somehow I got into the character by calling him Khabibulin.
That's outstanding. That is so great, Brad. Real pleasure having you on. We'll get you back on the show again. Okay.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you directing folks to bradschreiber.com.
Yeah.
And I got 10 years of writing on Huffington Post. All you have to do is type in my name, and you'll find my archive there, too, Nick.
Outstanding. Great to have you on. You're a real pleasure, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Brad Schreiber. The book is called What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. It is a terrific how-to book with a lot of really fun exercises. This is one of those books that if you want to write, you want to try and write, this needs to be on your desk right next to your laptop. It's one of those kind of books. So my thanks to Brad. We'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio. The news is coming up next.